There we go. Okay, it is the 17th of July, 1986, and this is an interview with Lieutenant Colonel Clifford D. Clive, and my name is Rick Aylward. To begin, Mr. Clive, first of all, where were you born and when, and perhaps you could give us a little bit of background with any connections with the military that your family may have had.
Well, first, I was born on January the 15th, January the 14th, 1915, on a farm just outside the town of Nipawa, which is approximately 125 miles west of Winnipeg. My immediate family, father, had no connection with the military, though I had four uncles and one aunt involved in World War I. Two of the uncles lost their lives overseas. I had no previous military training, though I had been a member of the Boy Scouts. Not that much military training. I had no connection with the military until the war broke out. I left the farm around the age of 20 and went to Eastern Canada. Got into radio, did some radio training, that is electronics, and I worked for a manufacturer of radio and subsequently TVs. My interest, of course, in the Army, we joined, well, prior to Canada actually declaring war, but with an English background, and my brother and I both joined up, having no family, not married. So. And my choice of what units, of course, because of my electronics background, I joined the Signal Corps. I wished to become a technician. I ended up as being a wireless operator. Initially.
I'm just wondering, what, given your lack of background with the military, what was your initial reaction to Army life and Army discipline in your training period? I know you were at the Berryfield Barracks in Kingston. Just what was your initial reaction to that lifestyle?
I found no difficulty in adapting to the routine of Army life, as a single one, i.e. a private. Entailed a lot of chores, but being in the Signal Corps, of course, a lot of training pertaining to our own particular arm of service, and that, I found that most interesting. The chores and Army drill was a break from the routine of inside classroom. Mm-hmm. Of course, we had small arms training, and then we had, of course, we had guard duty, and kitchen duty, things like that.
What was the feeling, as best as you can recall, of the men with whom you trained in Kingston with respect to the war itself? Was it a sort of a patriotic bunch, or were they looking forward to it as a sense of adventure or as duty, or how did the men with whom you trained view the hostilities in Europe?
Well, a mixture of adventure, patriotism, and duty, I suppose, to English, to England. Mm-hmm. Most of us had English backgrounds, not all by any means. Uh-huh. We had several from other parts of the country, or the world actually, as a background. I specifically recall two people who were, one was of Italian extraction, and another one was West Indian.
What, was there any, with respect to the Italian, was there any problems for that individual with respect to his background, as best as you can recall?
Not initially, but eventually, when Italy became involved, he was a matter of security. He was moved from removed from Signals and transferred to a unit deemed not to be too that wouldn't be involved in security such as Signals were.
Mm-hmm. So I would imagine in his case they would be doing a little bit of background checking just to see what exactly his family background would be.
I think, yes, see, immediately after the war, the open recruiting system was just not set up.
Mm-hmm.
And I recall that people were scrutinized. There was a lad in Winnipeg who was being involved in some rather unruly labor negotiations. And I think he had a bit of a background along that. They were all investigated very quietly.
Mm-hmm.
And those that are deemed not suitable for Signals work or could be given a security clearance or just quietly transferred.
Mm-hmm.
Without, there's one or two we lost, but we thought they were being hard done by, but ours not the reason why.
Yeah, yeah. I would imagine too, especially with respect to the Signal Corps, they would be very careful with of whom would be employed as a wireless officer and who had access to that equipment as well.
Yes, because we had access to not only the equipment, but we handled some pretty vital traffic. And when we went out over the air, say, in case of wireless, it was encoded, but you had access to, or could have access to some vital information, which, of course, required a high degree of security guard.
Who would be responsible for instance, conducting an investigation into, say, your background, just for a security clearance? Would this be military intelligence or army intelligence, or do you know exactly who would be responsible for that?
Combination of both, I think. As we're still in Canada, of course, it was quite easy to involve the RCMP and trace our family backgrounds.
Mm-hmm. You finally sailed for overseas on the 5th of January, 1940. We were so rudely interrupted there. I'm just wondering what the reaction to the Atlantic crossing was for a landlubber such as yourself. Were there any incidents on board ship or any problems for you personally or with the unit as a whole crossing the Atlantic?
Well, we were blessed. My first 3 days out from an Eastern Canadian port, i.e. Halifax, was very calm weather and it allowed everyone to get their sea legs.
Mm-hmm.
And I might add we needed them because we got to, I think we sailed in a northerly direction from Halifax and we ran into a howling blizzard and then very high gales to the extent that the Aquitania on which we were traveling, the upper decks were banned from any of the soldiers at all. Unless you were on duty, we had to stay below decks and we had 3 days of extremely heavy weather.
Mm-hmm.
But generally speaking, those prior 3 days or 2 days of calm weather allowed us to get our sea legs and personally I never missed a meal except one day I was out, we were in the rear lounge and off duty and playing bridge and I felt a bit queasy, but the cure was to get up, walk down amidships and center balance as it were. But the ship was big enough that we
Mm-hmm. Can you describe your feelings when you got to England and perhaps the Yelp unit as a whole? Were you eager to be where you were, nervous, anxious to get in the fray with the Germans? Or what was the feeling going from a peacetime, so to speak, Canada to a wartime England?
Well, I think it was mixed. I think that we wanted to go on and get mixed up there right away, but we realized that there was an awful lot of training ahead of us.
Uh-huh.
And also we didn't have any equipment. On a personal note, we were issued clothing which was of 1918 vintage. Our particular unit ended up in breeches and putties, a jacket, and though we had rifles, that's about all we had. Vehicles were very, very scarce. And all those things came later. I think it was about 8 months after we landed, we were issued with our first battle dresses. And more wireless equipment. Our first wireless equipment was rather ancient stuff to train on.
With respect to your rifles, are we talking here about fairly modern for that time weaponry, or was this World War I issue itself as well?
This was World War I issue, but this was a rifle that mm-hmm. was kept all through World War II to a great extent. Of course, they were replaced to some degree with Sten guns and Bren guns and things like that.
Mm-hmm. I know when you landed in Great Britain, initially you wound up in Scotland and ultimately at Aldershot and began training as a wireless operator. I know also from your background that you were, while in Aldershot, you were part of what's called a combined group for the potential defense of southern England. I would imagine, obviously, the threat of a German invasion at that time, I guess, was taken seriously enough to warrant having a large number of men in the south of England. I'm just wondering what type of restrictions would be placed on a unit in that area or on yourself personally as far as your ability to move around and communicate.
No restriction placed if you're on off duty here. We used to get into Aldershot to London for weekends if you're off duty, which is about 40, 50 miles away from Aldershot. Except that we were granted to, at that time, well, the first 2-3 months was very quiet, and then the breakthrough through France came by the Germans and the push through Belgium, and of course part of the Canadian Army was, though it hadn't been in action, had been moved to France, and they came back successfully, and of course Dunkirk occurred. The big question then was whether the Germans were going to invade England, and you can imagine all the rumors we had, one thing or another. The biggest lack, of course, was in England at that time was the transport because heavy guns and stuff because the Dunkirk brought back thousands and thousands of troops.
Most of the equipment
had to be dynamited or destroyed. Mm-hmm. So we ended up British Army was in disarray, being re-equipped and retrained redeployed as quickly as possible. In the meantime, the 1st Canadian Div was in the south of England, completing their training, still without too many vehicles, and we were immediately given the task of a certain portion of the country, which we had to defend. I was a corporal at that time, and we were having to, I was given, I think, about 12, 16 men, if I recall, including two Bren gun carriers, our rifles, and very little else, given an area which we were to defend, principally against attack from the air, paratroops, etc.
Mm-hmm. I know, too, while you were at Aldershot, you were part of a combined operations group, which was intended, I believe, to land on the Norwegian coast. In order to retake a certain airfield that had been captured by the Germans. I know the operation was ultimately canceled while you were en route to the departure point in Scotland. Can you just expand upon that a little bit?
This was a small combined group, which I think they were issued with maps of part of Norway, and there was an airfield near Nordheim, I think it was, been captured, and at that stage it was thought that a combined group could retake it for the Allied side. And I don't know the whole combination of the group. It wasn't very large,
mm-hmm.
Because I never saw the group. We were moved from Aldershot north. The port embarkation was supposed to be Scotland,
mm-hmm.
And we got, I think, about 3/4 of the way up in a rather dilapidated van and our wireless equipment. And we were told that too little and too late, and it was canceled and back to Aldershot. My assignment, I know, was to wade ashore. It was a number 10 set on my back. I recall the map, it looked like we had to do a spot of mounting climbing because the contour lines were so close together.
Uh-huh.
It was practically straight up for a little bit.
No kidding. When it says combined operation, or when you refer to combined operation too, normally this would be Army in conjunction with Air Force or Navy or vice versa. Was it also British and Canadian combined, or was it strictly a Canadian operation or intended to be a Canadian operation?
That I can't answer because I didn't see it. Being a corporal wireless operator at that time, I wasn't privy to the battle order at all.
Mm-hmm.
If we had joined together, I could have, or joined the Scotland, I'd have probably gathered the size of the group and the composition. But
mm-hmm.
I imagine that it was nothing but infantry and engineers with minimum of equipment to scale the cliff and try to retake an airfield.
Mm-hmm.
Then the plan would probably have been to have flown in heavy reinforcements with our own planes as soon as we'd secured the airfield. I don't know to this day whether the troops were all Canadian or not. There might have been some specially trained British
mm-hmm. commando type unit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know offhand why that particular airfield was deemed important enough for an operation to be launched against it? Was it in a strategic location, or?
The location and the closest to the coast, which we thought we could get into and retake and give us a base to move on from there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And finally, with respect to your time in Aldershot, I know you were involved in trades training, as I mentioned before, as a wireless operator. What specifically would that involve?
Well, a little bit of everything. Basically, we had to train at 15 words a minute on the key, because most of our signals work was all code and ciphered stuff for security.
Mm-hmm.
We had to know our equipment, of course. We had to know organization, not only our own organization, but every unit in a division and corps that we might come across
mm-hmm.
to work with them.
Mm-hmm.
Tactics were also a part of our training.
Uh-huh. By August 1940, your detachment was posted to Southampton to provide communication for an anti-aircraft battery. While you were there also, you took a course on German wireless telegraphy, I guess the technology that they used. How did their equipment compare to yours, generally speaking? And vice versa.
At that stage of the game, of course, their equipment was miles ahead of us because some of the equipment we trained on had been captured in the desert and sent back to England for training purposes, so that if we ran out of equipment or we met equipment in the field, we could utilize it.
Mm-hmm.
And I recall then that there was one protector set I trained on, the license plate showing the year of manufacture was 1936.
Mm-hmm.
And their equipment at that time, military-wise, was miles ahead of us.
Subsequently,
we caught up and I would say surpassed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. While you were at Southampton, or even before that, for that matter, were you trained at all in sending forged or fake messages to the Germans who would be perhaps listening in France?
No, I wasn't trained in that. There was a special unit in the a special section in the Signal Corps that was trained for that.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd move around from here to there.
Did you personally have any interest in cipher training at all?
No.
Not at all?
I was more technical.
Mm-hmm. By October 1940, you had been located to Headley Court, in the south of England, and I'm just wondering, by now you'd been in England, the unit had been there for several months, 8 or 9 months. What were the feelings of the men, and I realize this is not a quote combat unquote unit, but what were the feelings as far as the inactivity in terms of the Army actually, you know, fighting the Germans, so to speak? Was there frustration or sort of understanding that stalemated them at that particular time, or were the men sort of itching to get at them, so to speak?
I think there was a certain amount of frustration that now that we've gone through the training and completed our trades training and military training, and
mm-hmm.
we're fairly well equipped with vehicles and arms and equipment and wireless equipment, signal equipment.
Mm-hmm.
There was a certain amount of frustration and you know, where are we going to get going?
Mm-hmm. I guess for yourself, though, you were being involved in a technical aspect, you had plenty to occupy your time with.
Well, there was that, about, and of course...
as far as learning new
yes,
equipment or training
yes.
younger officers or...
Yes.
Mm-hmm. By January 1941, you'd been promoted up to sergeant and transferred subsequently to the 2nd Wireless Telegraphy Section of the 1st Canadian Corps. You were working at this time with a ground-to-air recce unit with the RCAF 401 Squadron. How did you find that experience, working with airmen? Was there... any communication problems with respect to terminology, Army lingo versus Air Force lingo? Any difficulties in that?
No, part? No. We provided the ground equipment and the ground operators, and of course the pilots doing air recce mostly.
Mm-hmm.
You have to. Realize that there was no cipher the code words, but it was plain English all the time, so it was quite easy to have
mm-hmm.
understand because
mm-hmm.
the reaction was, but it was the recce plane, of course, it was immediate. It came back to us and it was forwarded then on to the forward units to tell them what they were going to run up to, or instructions to the gunners that around us to
mm-hmm.
So they could engage targets ahead.
Mm-hmm. So there was, and in your opinion, there was very little difficulty in combining the two branches?
No, we found none.
Mm-hmm. By October of that year, 1941, you had been selected for Officer Cadet Training Unit, which I believe was a 6-month course. What were the criterion applied for your selection there? Was it based strictly on past performance, or were you recommended by senior officer, or?
I was recommended by my section officer. And one of the reasons I think that there was rather rapid promotion, at least I considered it rapid. I was a sergeant at the time, but the units were expanding so fast, and people, reinforcements and new units coming over, that they had, once I was recommended, my next step was to go before I think it was a 5-man or a 3-man senior officer selection board.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a verbal questionnaire for about an hour, and that was it. And subsequently, after that, I was informed I had been selected. And
based on that question, it was pass or fail. That was.
Yeah, that was it.
That was it.
Yeah, and I must say that those troubles went on this particular class, and we joined a British unit for OCTU unit for officer training, and of the 12. The Canadians were from all different signaling units, but I think they were all sergeants or sergeant majors.
Is that right?
Well, that indicated, you know, that they thought, well, you've come up this far, you had your training, and you weren't going to be a sergeant unless you'd shown some
mm-hmm.
form of...
some spark there.
Well, leadership, planning on that.
Uh-huh. After the OCTU unit training, you were commissioned as a first lieutenant and posted to the 1st Canadian Signals Reinforcement Unit at Cove in England. At that time, your wife joined you. I'm just curious, what were the regulations or provisions governing married men or officers at this time, as far as spouses were concerned, living conditions and whatnot?
Well, her wife came down from England. She was working in civil defense. They all had some sort of a job. She was a civilian, of course. She laterally became involved in some of the service organizations working with the Canadian Army. But we obtained a room in a house not very far from the barracks, like big training barracks you're in,
mm-hmm.
and providing I wasn't involved in on duty that evening. We had to go, beside our regular technical training, we had, of course, to have guard duty and duty officer, orderly officer, and things like that. If you weren't on duty, you were allowed a what they call a sleeping out pass, which meant you left the camp after your regular duty hours, and you had to be back in 6 or 7 in the morning. And on the weekends, of course, we could have our wives in the officer's mess, which kind of helped very much in the...
Sure, sure. Was there any particular strain or any special strain on a marriage in that situation that you say would not find in a civilian background? Any peculiarities with the lifestyle in terms of the hours kept or the nature of the jobs?
No, I think in my own case, we were very glad to have what time we could have before we went overseas.
Mm-hmm.
Bearing in mind that 8 months previous I'd been married, our honeymoon had been cut short to go for officer training, and of course the first thing they did was post me to the opposite end of the country, so I didn't see my new bride for 6 months later. So we were very glad to get together, however short time was, because we knew
mm-hmm.
that subsequently that it would come to the end. And actually what happened about 3-4 months before D-Day is that the wives were told to, all sleeping out past arrangements were canceled, and the wives were told that they weren't welcome in the south of England.
Okay.
That.
No kidding. During your time at Cove, and later on even when you were at with the 2nd Canadian Division Signals in Partridge Green, we're talking about a period of 6 or 7 months. During that 6 month time span, what activities were you engaged in primarily? Were you involved at all in monitoring German communication?
No.
Were you...
It was all training and field exercises
mm-hmm.
on a divisional or corps level.
Mm-hmm. I know within a year you moved briefly to Dover Castle and ultimately to what was referred to as number one line of communication signals. Was this a special branch of the Signal Corps, or what exactly was line of communication signals? A sub-branch perhaps?
No, it's a unit in its own right. It's the organization of the Canadian Army was Army headquarters, divisional headquarters, or corps headquarters, and divisional headquarters, and all these organizations have to be connected together with signals, either in the form of telephone lines or wireless links.
Mm-hmm.
And LSC happened to be the connection between down to Army headquarters. There were a lot of odds and sods units in there that could be sent or detached to work with division or brigade or corps. So
mm-hmm.
we never knew where we were going to get moved to.
Mm-hmm. Now presumably when you're talking about after the unit had moved to the European mainland, you're talking about the ground communications primarily. Cables laid along the ground or...
Well, initially, as an army advances, your communications is all by wireless, of course. And then as things settle down a bit, you can start putting in telephone lines. In the first instance, the lines are laid on the ground, very temporary and subject to be broken by shell fire and
mm-hmm.
run over by vehicles. As soon as the front moves further ahead, they then could put permanent lines in, overhead lines as we're accustomed to in this country. And that's not only for phones, but also for telepartners and things like that.
Mm-hmm. During this time, too, you'd been promoted to the rank of captain. And shortly thereafter, you moved in May 1944 to the staging area just prior to D-Day. I would imagine within your unit, as within all Allied armies at that time, there must have been the speculation just prior to 6th of June must have been fairly rampant with respect to where you were going and when you were going and where you were landing exactly. Can you give me some idea what the feeling and the sort of the heightened emotions would be just prior to June 6th, 1944?
Well, a great relief at long last, and you know, they're gone for several years, that we were all ready to go, and we were last showing some signs of going somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
True, part of the Canadian Army had gone out to Sicily and Italy, and we're the ones that had been left or built up again in England. But general anticipation, and bearing in mind we thought we were fully trained and all ready to go. About several weeks before D-Day, we were issued with a map of the French coast. But it comprised a lot of territory, and of course we weren't told anything, just to be familiar with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about 10 days before D-Day, I was called into my company commander's office and told to sit down at the table, and he brought me a book with a fairly thick book, a couple inches thick, all nicely bound. And he had to open the book at a certain page, I forget the number, and he just copy down these wireless frequencies and you don't turn any of the pages. So I copied down the wireless frequencies and read the text, which gave me an idea who I was working with and what their job might be. And that was it. I was in, the book was taken away from me, and I was allowed to keep the information in my notebook.
Mm-hmm.
Subsequently found out that book was contained the whole plan for D-Day and several weeks afterwards.
No kidding. No kidding.
Whoever wrote that book the planning in that was absolutely astounding.
Ridiculous, I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it would have to be.
I don't want to jump forward, but when we did get across in our Liberty ships, on the bottom deck of the Liberty ship, there were some Bren gun carriers loaded, and we were curious to why. There were just some chalk marks on the front of them. But when we landed a couple of days later in France, there were drivers down from one of the units to pick up these Bren gun carriers. They had been planned ahead, it was in our boat. And it was first line reinforcements or second line reinforcements for Europe that got ahead of us.
Yeah, I guess they had it trying to break down to the nuts and bolts and had no doubt. Tell me about the NCO wedding.
Oh, well, you know, if all Canadian soldiers that planned to get married in England were paraded before.